your favorite source for Chicago White Sox talk, delivering news, interviews, analysis, and more. This is the Sox Machine Podcast with your hosts, Jim Margulis, James Fegan, and Josh Nelson.
Thanks, Rob, and welcome to a new Sox Machine Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Nelson, and it's Thursday night, December 4th, 2025, as we record this episode. And the days are going to be important here because more and more news is coming in with the MLB offseason. The hot stove finally heating up. In a couple of days, James Fegan and I will be leaving frozen Chicago, and Jim Margulis will be meeting us in Orlando for the 2025 winter meetings. In this show, we'll preview the winter meetings from a Chicago White Sox perspective. Is Luis Robert trade talks heating up once again? Will Chris Getz check off another item on the offseason shopping list? Who are the White Sox taking in the Rule 5 draft? And will luck strike for the White Sox during the MLB draft lottery? We'll chime in on those questions while answering a couple from our listeners. But prior to the winter meetings, Getz did find a starting pitcher by signing left-hander Anthony Kay to a two-year contract with a mutual option for creative accounting purposes. Kay is making $5 million in 2026 and in 2027, with the hopes he can be an effective starter and eat up innings. So what should we know about Anthony Kay? That's a great place to start for this show. And joining me are Sox Machine Speed reporter James Fegan and managing editor Jim Margulis. And hello, gentlemen. James Fegan, Anthony Kay, now part of the Chicago White Sox starting rotation. What should White Sox fans know about Anthony Kay?
Left-handed.
Great start. Yeah. All right. So he's left-handed.
He was a former first-round pick from the Mets. Oddly enough, was like, which is like just a elite changeup guy coming out of college, out of UConn. I think 2 years behind Ryan Fuller, 2 years between him and Ryan Fuller's glorious tenures on the UConn baseball team.
Was Anthony Kay on the George Springer team?
Was he at UConn? I don't know. Now he's throwing people for a loop. He had TJ. Arsenal kind of changed after that. His velocity did go up. He still throws like a very consistent 94. So as much as we're going to talk about him like not having a good fastball, it's more in terms of action than, he's a soft tosser. But never really like got back in terms of earning a rotation spot in the majors or really getting some sustained run after TJ like had some starts moved around, became more breaking ball heavy, which he kind of is now. Just didn't really get on track in some major way and didn't get like any kind of major league runway other than, cups of coffee or long relief where he then didn't look good and got hit pretty hard. Because his four seamer doesn't really have a lot of bat missing shape. So this is the second of 2 years in Japan he had. Second one a lot better than the first. He piles up ground balls. He's been mixing in sinkers and cutters a lot more, especially tons of cutters to right-handers. He's someone who kind of pitches the way you hear about Mason Adams or Juan Carolla pitching in the minors in the White Sox system, where he uses like three different fastball shapes to get around not really having like one big weapon, a lot of playing with timing, a lot of off-time swings, a lot of ground balls, ideally. Japan, just Far East baseball in general, is going through like kind of a dead ball period in terms of the offense, and like they're not even just the offensive style, even among the good hitters, is a lot more contact oriented. So it's a lot easier to throw sinkers there and maybe not get whacked for it, and just throw fastballs in the zone in general, not get whacked in the same way. You're trying to manage base runners and be ahead in counts there, whereas you're tiptoeing around power a little bit more here. So that's kind of one of the big adjustments he's going to face. But full disclosure, and not a really full disclosure thing, but like something Eric and I on the prospect team at Fangraphs worked on last month was like, let's scout everybody who's coming over from Korea and Japan. It was fun because as a beat writer, you're usually, hitting up people for information on the White Sox, and like, especially if you're talking to people on a team, you're trying to get specific info for a probably story, and there's the hesitancy that they're not going to share something with you if they don't want to be out there. But this was a case of like, we're just trying to get who everyone's coming over. So we got a lot of like feedback from a lot of different people about like who was coming over and, spent a lot of time on Anthony Kay because it was very clear that like he was coming back and had earned a right where he was going to get a look. And I thought, and maybe long term, that it was more like, obviously this guy doesn't have overpowering stuff. He can do things. He throws a lot of strikes. He can get through an order once or twice, but it's going to be hard to see like this big ceiling for him with the way he operates. And I felt like ideal team, he's kind of a swingman. So of course he's coming to the White Sox. One, the team that's going to win him over, since he had offers to like pitch again in Japan, just keep being a really good starter in Japan, that, you know, they were said to be more lucrative than here, is that the team that was going to get him over here was the team that was going to give him a chance to really start. But there's definitely, like, I think a room for the Sox to definitely look for the type of starter of, hey, maybe like averageous production is really the most we're hoping for here, but you can give it in bulk because he threw 155 innings last year. You throw strikes. You're going to be on the less expensive side because strikeouts are expensive, and that's not what his game was built around there. Even, you know, against, you know, an inferior competition, he's more of like a 7K per nine type of dude. I think, like, especially for a team that's just quite literally replacing Martin Perez, he throws a bit harder than, you know, current Martin Perez, but it's a very similar type of pitcher. It's like, this guy's going to mix it up. He's going to throw strikes. He's left side, so he can control the running game a little bit. And definitely for him to be effective, the White Sox infield defense probably has to be a little bit better than it was last year. So it's simultaneously not Cody Ponce, where it's like, this guy might be a number three starter if everything clicks and things translate. It doesn't have like this next star type of guy potential here for something that could be the bigger, if not the biggest, free agent signing in the winter. But it will be at least an interesting test for the organization, because if Anthony Kay is effective, it's because they were able to carve out kind of a good attack plan for this type of pitcher. It's very similar in terms of like expanding his arsenal to what Zach Pove pointed out that they did successfully last year with Chris Bubich, Noah Cameron. They were an expand the arsenal type of coaching staff back there. So it's probably what it's going to bring here a little bit. And it will test if they can make their infield defense an actual asset, which we're waiting on that train for a minute now, but it got a little bit better last year. Maybe it could be actually good this year, after 2 years after it was supposed to be an above average defense, and why the 2024 team was supposed to be just regular awful and not a permanent scar on the franchise history. So Anthony Kay on the way back for the White Sox, if they can make this work, it would show kind of like that their roster is healthy and functioning, that they can be like, hey, we're going to sign a ground ball pitcher and we're going to do what it takes to make him effective.
All right. So that's Anthony Kay. As you wrote on Sox Machine, Jim, Kay's adjustments overseas, as James was mentioning about the fastballs and throwing sinkers and the four seamer, even the four seamer doesn't have great shape, that it kind of fits with what the White Sox are doing with the current pipeline of pitchers with fastballs. And even though it's just $5 million, which is not a lot of money in baseball today for starting pitching, does this signing carry any more risk because of the uncertainty of how Kay will transition from Japan over to the major leagues? Or does the previous success for the organization that they had with like Eric Fetty squash those fears?
I think at this price point, everybody you're looking at carries some kind of risk. And I think this is maybe a little more pronounced in the sense that, like, if he is a number four starter, that's a good deal for $5 million.
Oh, yeah.
Especially, you know, he's lefty, which the White Sox don't have. All the talk about holding the running game in check, like, he's shown a history of doing that in the major and minor leagues. And he's lefty, which helps. And it gives me a little bit more confidence that the White Sox can make strides in that area versus like calling in Zach Bove and saying like, help fix these guys who are here and didn't have the acumen to do it last year, like be a miracle worker. So it does feel like they are, at least in that respect, supplying him with like the correct tool in order to do that. I think the risk is that like he comes over and just doesn't work. He gets hammered and proves that Japan right now is just like the hitting style is not comparable with what they're doing in the majors and falls flat in their face. There is some bullpen backup in terms of their fallback that he can go into like a long relief swing man type thing if it doesn't work out in the rotation. But I think like that's the risk. But you know, they signed Martin Perez around this price point last year he was supposed to be innings eater, and then he wasn't because, you know, he had shoulder problems, elbow problems. So everybody, I think, you know, carries something. I think, you know, the bigger source of, like, shouldn't even call it discontent. Yeah, we'll see what the off season brings. But just, you know, right now, I think the rotation could use somebody who maybe jostles an incumbent out of a spot and forces him to work his way back into the pitching apparatus's good graces, versus just having a Martin Perez replacement and still Shane Smith and Davis Martin, who do look like locks, and then Sean Burke and Jonathan Cannon, who right now aren't being challenged, especially since they traded Yoandris Gomez. So they could still use another starter, I think, that just feels a bit more certain, whether the White Sox are going to provide themselves that is an open question. But that's, I think, what would make this feel like a little bit more of an upside play versus somebody who's just like, oh, I hope he's adequate, because otherwise just biding time until Hagen Smith and or Noah Schultz are ready.
Yeah, I have to assume, James, that the White Sox are still in the market to add another starting pitcher, because as Jim mentions here, the projected starting rotation right now, in early December, prior to the winter meetings after signing Anthony Kay, Shane Smith, Davis Martin, Sean Burke, Anthony Kay, and then a battle between, I guess, Jonathan Cannon and Tanner McDougal. Maybe McDougal still wouldn't be ready, but he'll get that opportunity in spring training. This is a good start for the White Sox. They got a starting pitcher, but they needed two starting pitchers this offseason, so I assume they're still in the market, right?
Yeah, opening day, Tanner McDougal in the rotation seems a little spicy.
We thought the same thing with Shane Smith, and that rock.
I mean, that the least they were contractually bound to, as opposed to kind of rushing for rushing's sake. Yeah, it's more about like what caliber will they add on? Is it someone like Bryce Wilson signing, where it's kind of hybrid swingman territory for a small guarantee? But they both need competition with Burke and Cannon. Get set at the GM meetings at Cannon and kind of Burke too, though I think Burke was kind of ahead since he finished the year in the rotation, that they both were kind of coming in the spring competing for a rotation slot rather than like locks. They need more insurance, especially as far as like immediate readiness, since they have some more depth coming midseason with TJ coming back and your prospects matriculating. But they need someone in case one of these guys gets hurt ramping up. Like, spring is when that happens, is when you see kind of a spate of guys who the ramp up process like goes awry or reveals something. So it's more about like, I would be surprised if there are, pleasantly surprised if there was something more like equal or on the level 2K to add the rotation, but the rotation does need more adds. Now that could change if they're able to acquire more outfielders or, address some of their needs positionally through trades that don't or cost very much or just cost talent, or bring in guys who are on minimum salaries. And maybe that sees, what they are able to do, or they're able to, acquire starting pitching like that, or someone they're comfortable kind of handing the reins to for, hey, we need this. This is a post-hype guy who needs runway, and we're going to give him starts, or someone veteran that they think they can tweak something with. I think that kind of is a necessity. It's probably, it'd be surprised if you saw them spend more money on this, but it depends on like how lucky they are adding minimum guys for other needs that they have.
So does that mean, Jim, if Anthony Kay is the highest caliber starting pitcher the White Sox added to this offseason, is that disappointing?
Yeah, I think so. Just because, if he's tied for the caliber, I would say no. That's probably, what you'd expect more or less. Just because of the money we figure they'll be restricted to. But yeah, if it's K and then like Bryce Wilson, I would consider that, falling short of what they said they needed, unless they're getting like fantastic off-season reports from the Cannon camp or something like that. you know, we've seen him dodge disaster all, you know, most of last year by finding guys who could get it done. So, like, it's not going to be, you know, first of all, I don't think the sky can fall with where the White Sox are right now. Like, they're kind of suffocated by fallen sky already. Like, drop ceiling is just caved in on them, and they're still trying to dig themselves out. But when it comes to, like, the just the general feeling of, like, are they a serious team? Like, it does make them feel short of serious if they're just, like, kind of rolling out the same five with a different lefty in the rotation and hoping it'll be different.
Well, we are expecting the White Sox to be active during the winter meetings. The hot stove has been heating up around Major League Baseball. Not only did the White Sox sign a starting pitcher, the Toronto Blue Jays, man, Cody Ponce, Dylan Cease filling out their starting rotation, flirting with Kyle Tucker. Kyle Tucker visiting the spring training facility. We'll see if that's real, if that comes to fruition. But for the Chicago White Sox, all eyes, again, are on Luis Robert Jr. And if you didn't get a chance to read James's excellent piece on SoxMachine.com, I highly recommend it. Even Jeff Passan chimed in on ESPN.com when he listed several players in likelihood of them getting traded. And after Cedric Mullins signed a one-year, $7 million contract, which I nailed that contract in my offseason plan project. However, he signed with Tampa Bay. Boy, the free agent market for center fielders, James, is shallow. So is that what is going to be driving this conversation when we're in Orlando, when we're hearing rumors or gossipers, Jim, or gossip?
Yes.
About Luis Robert Jr. is because for teams that need center field help, dear Lord, there's nothing to be found in free agency. So you might as well pick up the phone and call Minnesota and Chicago to see what it'll take to get Byron Buxton or Luis Robert. Is that where Major League Baseball is right now when it comes to center field?
I would say Harrison Bader had a better 2025 than Robert. Okay. Straight up, but like, he's 32 and certainly teams have flexed him out to a corner a lot, but his metrics are pretty good in center. You could make an argument that that's still a better option on the board at this point, especially if you're just kind of worried for 1 year. Robert kind of has this high ceiling, especially given that Mullins, the way he's the offense is like trended, it's much more of a kind of a stopgap, you know, glove first option at this point. Robert's effectively been that for the last 2 years anyway, but in terms of trying to convince yourself you're making a meaningful upgrade to that position or reorienting your outfield, I think Robert seems a little unique in the market at this point. Still pretty expensive. It's still been literally back-to-back 84 WRC plus years. There's a lot of reasons that the value will be hard to square or the, you know, what it returns, since the White Sox need outfielders. It's probably not going to get outfielder, like the idea of them getting like some Miguel Vargas equivalent outfielder who's like 23, 24 and running out of like options and doesn't get a chance, get him back for Robert. Why would they just play Robert, that guy instead of Robert? So there's reasons it might not happen, but in terms of, you're certainly not getting the Robert playing well part of the dynamic to stir trade discussions, but in terms of the market being as bare as you want it, you could reasonably expect it to. I'd say that's there. At this point, Trent Grisham taking the QO, probably seal that up.
No, that's a good point. And I guess, Jim, on when it comes to like the center field situation, because I think this is the debate for teams. There is a no trade clause for Byron Buxton. But Byron, man, I think the writing's on the wall in Minneapolis. If you're cool writing it out on teams that are going to be competing with the White Sox at the bottom of the American League Central, don't waive that no trade clause. But if you're willing to waive it, I mean, we're talking about an outfielder in Byron Buxton who did play 118 games in the outfield, but you have to be careful. You can't play him 150 games out there because, unfortunately, he still deals with nagging injuries, much like Luis Robert Jr. But according to Baseball Reference, Buxton was almost a five-war player. It's 3 years, a little bit more than $45 million left on Buxton's contract compared to 1 year and a club option with Luis Robert. I feel like, Jim, if we land in Orlando on Sunday And Jeff Passan tweets out that Byron Buxton's willing to waive his no trade clause. That slots like Luis Robert Jr. number two in the trade power rankings from center fielders. I feel like teams would be more interested trying to get Byron Buxton than Luis Robert at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine so. I imagine it'll be a pretty, aggressive bidding war, assuming that they have like the kind of depth in center to rest Buxton, like rotate him in and out. You know, there are some, you know, like James talked about in the post about how it requires like a very specific team that can use Robert's defense and can battle like towards the bottom of the order, or at least, feel comfortable doing that. And like, if he breaks out, then they can move him up. And if he continues being the glove first center fielder who doesn't really hit, like they can still get that fantastic center field defense. And then anything provides on the base paths and against lefties, you know, serves the purpose. Kind of like we've talked about the Phillies being like a great landing spot because they haven't needed the offense from center. They've needed the defense and somebody being capable of starting every day in Roberts that, whereas Buxton, like he just, you know, he's good. He can start, like he's fine as long as he's healthy. So like a little less maintenance involved. So yeah, it's a superior argument. Also, you know, like making less money in a given year, the AAV is lower. So to me, like, yeah, thinking about it and thinking about like watching Mullen sign for $7 million and then watching Robert have $20 million owed to him, like it does seem like the White Sox would have to throw in some cash in order to get like a deal that would really feel like the White Sox got something. That's not something the White Sox typically do, but the White Sox also typically don't pay players $20 million coming off bad seasons if they don't have to. So if they're really looking just to get something for Robert, like that's the goal of this project, is to, you know, be able to trade him for somebody they can use, then that doesn't preclude including like half a salary going with them, because like, how are they going to spend that money better than getting a prospect they actually like, or getting a young player, whatever the return is that they actually like? Like I wouldn't bet on it happening, but I think these are the conditions that would make it most likely for the White Sox to do something like this.
I still wonder if the asking price might be a little high for other teams from their point of view. When they call Chris Getz or they text him about what it will take to acquire Luis Robert Jr., which I think that's a good like discussion when it comes to Luis Robert. If you are Chris Getz, what would you need from another team to trade Luis Robert, Jim? Like what would you be asking for?
I mean, somebody they can use. Like, that's kind of what it comes down to, is like they can use
near ready MLB talent.
Yeah. You know, and not like I'm thinking about like previous trades, like the Dylan Cease, like I think Sammy Zavala, like somebody like him, like interesting young A outfielder who a team is content to give up. Like that would make me nervous. Like, wait, what's the point of all this if it just ends up in a lottery ticket for an outfielder? So it does feel like it needs to be more certain. But yeah, just like I think the ship has sailed when it comes to like getting a real impact prospect, unless it's like Edgar Caro or something like that. Like that kind of situation where you're talking about like double A, some conditions making him look worse than he is, like the Angels rushing Caro, like having him skip high A, like that played perfectly into the White Sox ability to get him because he just didn't look that impressive. So, I mean, like there are prospects who aren't like immediately knocking on the door, but, you know, have top 100 qualities to them in the right situation where they're not being rushed. So like that kind of return, I think, would be fair for the money. Like if they're willing to throw in money, you know, and make, you know, Robert like an, you know, $10 million player or an $8 million player, then I think, you know, the price can go up a little bit, the standards can rise. But yeah, for $20 million, it just seems like that price, yeah, that's more than his market value. So like there's no surplus value there to really make a compelling trade demand until he starts actually posting and posting the numbers.
And James, there hasn't been like any whispers about what the White Sox or maybe Chris Getz is looking for in a Luis Robert offer?
Someone they think is good. They've been offered like prospect bats for it. They've been offered kind of near term I remember like Carson Wisenhunt was a name that was like being thrown out like last offseason, but I think it's in terms of like at this point they you want like someone post hype you can probably throw right away, and it's probably a little hard to imagine it being like someone who's currently projected to be a regular, but maybe someone they see still being able to access past ceiling that's been projected for them, but maybe has fallen a bit where there is like some regular ceiling. Like obviously Miguel Vargas had been given like a 50 future value at some point in his past, even if feel like it had diminished by the point they acquired him. So I think someone of that ilk or tier, but I think how much salary they have to eat and how that affects the prospect return could shift that balance quite a bit. Like if it's they're taking on the full salary and it's kind of a potential bench guy, but we can start him right away and he's ready to go. He's 25 and like can take all the playing time we want. Maybe that works for them a bit more than eating a bunch of salary and getting higher ceiling, but like waiting a few more years. I don't know. Like it, I couldn't tell you. Like I don't think there's a specific profile. I think they're just trying to get value that makes
Okay.
sense or makes it worth it and fits their roster.
Is it fair for me to feel skeptical that this is going to happen over the winter meetings, James? A Luis Robert trade.
Yes, because it's a 72-hour window in a off season that has no like fixed timelines for anything. So,
It felt like the Gerrit Crochet trade last winter meetings. There was like a deadline. Like, I want to figure something out before I leave Dallas.
I think it was more like, but the deadline kind of tumbled out of like the action before it in terms of
Okay.
they had just missed out on Fried and they felt like they had to do something for like the market closed out on them more and like they're running out of options and that created urgency. Like, was I, do I feel like maybe Breslow relaxed a little bit on the plane having it done and appreciated that? Sure, but I don't feel like that massively change the calculus of like what will work for a trade. I know like they want the winter meetings to be a TV event. We all want our corporate work conventions to be 24-hour news somehow, but I just don't think it has like this magical power that things have to happen. Maybe I've just heard too many recon explanations about why there's nothing special about these meetings, but and it's kind of gotten into my like wiring at a deep level, but I don't know. It's off season content, man. I need to stretch it out as much as you have. Like, do nothing at the winter meetings, but yeah, you have to interview anyway, and then we have Zooms when you do sign somebody. Makes fewer ideas. I have to come up with my own over the course of the winter. That's what I'm
Do
rooting
it for
for.
us. Do it for us, White Sox. Do something. Again, podcast listener, I'm skeptical something happens, especially if we do land in Orlando, and it's a real possibility if Byron Buxton waives his no trade clause, is willing to. I have to imagine many teams would be calling to try to swoop him up. And then that might be another obstacle for Chris Getz in trying to move Luis Robert, but it doesn't, in past interviews with Chris Getz, I just get the impression, Jim, that he's not really eager to move Luis Robert. He's willing to do it if you blow him away or you offer something that Chris Getz views that is fair in trading Luis Robert. That makes sense because that's a pretty big hole that the White Sox punch in their roster if they do trade Luis Robert. Now they got to figure out what they're going to be doing out in center field. But I'm just skeptical a team's going to blow Chris Getz away in an offer. And I still am expecting Luis Robert to be part of the White Sox all the way up to opening day.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I think, the safer bet. I think it's just, part of the comforts or, gets his stances just who else are going to play? Where else is the money going to go? The depth chart looks scary behind it. Like you have Derek Hill and Everson Pereira, kind of.
I mean, that's your outfield right
Yeah,
now.
pretty much. Yeah. And Brooks Ball, like there's nobody there, so like you can kind of operate from the stance that like I'm comfortable keeping them because where else are outfield innings going to come from with this current depth chart that I have? And the reason you're trading for Luis Robert is because like the options there they're not plentiful. They're not plentiful for the teams that need somebody to contend. They're not plentiful for teams like the White Sox that just unless they're like content with like a JJ Bleday type reclamation project. But if you don't consider him a true center fielder, then yeah, it's pretty messy for the second tier teams. So that's, I think, why he's able to have this stance without looking foolish. You know, perhaps the foolishness has already happened with him picking up the option when teams didn't think he would. You know, it's not like Dylan Cease, where they kind of had to deal him. Not like Garrett Crochet. You know, after the season, you know, they didn't have to deal him during the season when he put those conditions on a trade. But after the season, felt like, yeah, this is your time to do it, and he did it. But like, this doesn't have those same hallmarks of a deal that has to be done just because they have him. He can possibly help his stock with the first half performance, probably can't hurt it more than he already has. Maybe just the all offers, evaporate versus like some one that's not going to please any White Sox fan. But that's really like what we're looking at here in terms of the risk reward. Like, the risk, I think, is minimal, because if he's not pulling pulling the trigger on a deal that could help them in some respect, then it would just feel like, you know, he's a lottery ticket. Like, you traded like Paul DeJong for Harold Rosado, and just like, yeah, it's another deal like that, where it's just a double A lottery ticket for what was supposed to be the star player of a very long contention window.
Well, let's take a look at the White Sox shopping list during the winter meetings. Again, this is my list. The White Sox need another starting pitcher. We talked about that. Outfield, the White Sox still need outfield help, whether or not they keep Luis Robert, and maybe they could use a reliever. They have yet to figure out a left-handed infielder, add them to the roster. That's something that Chris Getz has mentioned. Since Chris Getz has taken over as general manager of the Chicago White Sox, they've done something during the winter meetings, either signing a free agent or making a trade. So Jim and James, if you had to guess, what do you sense the White Sox accomplishing during these winter meetings? I'll start with you, James.
Winning the draft lottery and successfully popping several bottles of champagne with no injuries to baseball operations staff. Book it.
Okay.
You mean like an actual move? Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah, like I was going to say, like, so that's it? Nothing? Yeah. Just sit back and watch the lottery balls land in their favor?
Does the Rule of Five draft count as a move?
I guess. Yes. Which that was going to be our next topic.
They got 34 guys on the 40-man or something like that.
Yeah.
Waiver claim. Somebody else signs a free agent, has a DFA guy. Sox are right there, gobbling it up.
Feel the excitement.
Write it in. Mark it down.
Jim, how about you? If you had to guess what the White Sox do during the winter meetings, what would they do?
It's like I'm picturing like when Minnie Margulis is in the high chair, Chief would lure below him for any food that dropped off the table. Like, we call him the furry Roomba, and that's what the White Sox are right now. They are baseball's furry Roomba, ready to get anything that looks remotely appetizing coming off the counter or coming off the table.
That's so pathetic, but it's true. Yeah, I mean, like this is where the White Sox are these days.
But yeah, like, it feels like because the White Sox, you know, are picking so high up in the Rule 5 draft, it's like they do kind of have to earmark a roster spot. So it will feel like an addition of some kind, especially given the success that they had last year, that it will be a move, and it will be somebody, assuming that they have, you know, perhaps it's a Rule 5 crop that they just feel like it's Shane Drillin's all the way down, where they just, you know, they're nobody particularly, you know, that moves them. You know, perhaps they just feel like, man, maybe we'll get Peyton Paulette back, and it'll be our move, basically, is having, you know, him back in the organization if he ends up getting claimed. But assuming that they have somebody they like along the lines of like Shane Smith last year, they have to, that takes care of one of the bullpen spots. So yeah, I think I'm not expecting a whole lot. If they signed somebody, I could see him signing a reliever. Like, it does feel like they need to sign some kind of veteran reliever, you know, maybe like above the John Brebbia tier of, you know, guys who Might get a 2-year deal. Just I think for Will Venable's sake. So if I had to bet on any free agent being signed, I guess I would say reliever.
Yeah, pitching market seems to be moving faster than the position player market so far during this offseason. I'm with Jim. I think the White Sox signed a reliever during the winter meetings, and we have something to talk about.
Well, you're with me in the sense of reliever. I don't think they're going to sign a reliever at the winter meeting, so we're half in agreement.
They're signing a reliever during the winter meetings.
Okay.
There you go, James.
Rule five draft. You know,
They're going to win the draft lottery. I mean, that is bold, since no team that's had the best odds has actually won the MLB draft lottery.
I got a stone face for suggesting they win the draft lottery. Of all the people to act uncaring about having the first.
Right. The odds are not in your favor. The trend. Well, the odds are in your favor.
Think about how
27%
chance. The odds are against their favor to both win the draft lottery and not injure themselves with champagne corks. I mean, that's got to be less than 25%.
That's quite the parlay. So the Rule 5 draft, I think we're all in agreement. The White Sox are adding someone. They're going to draft someone during the Rule 5 draft. Baseball America, if you go over to their website, they released their latest Rule 5 draft eligible player rankings. James, is there anyone that catches your attention when you look at the Rule 5 eligible players for the White Sox with that pick?
Oh, baby, is there? It depends on what they want. I feel like, you know, maybe I'm just judging off, you know, Smith and Vassell last year, but they used that to cover like a lot of innings. And they looked for guys who were more so Vassell than Smith, obviously, but pretty stretched out, more stretched out than certainly a normal reliever, that they were able to maybe get more out of their present stuff. Whereas I feel like past Rule Fives have been like, you know, or a generation ago, Rule Fives were like, let's find somebody who throws 100, like Ronaldo Yin with the Dodgers, and maybe we can find one weird trick in spring training where he throws strikes. Whereas now it's a bit more like, actually getting guys to throw strikes is pretty hard. Let's see if we can give somebody like a new pitch and get through that way. But just because I did the Astros list for Fangraphs, my guy Olimber Santa, who's a right-handed reliever, is available. He is he got up to AAA this year. He did not throw strikes when he was there. That is an issue for him. You don't want to see double digit walks for 9, but like, it's because he did well in AA to get up there, but he's up to like 99. Everything he like throws like moves really east-west. He's super nasty on righties. You can like, he has like a cutter, slider, and curveball, and they're all kind of like funky different shapes. And it's got a thick lower half. You can see where the power is coming. Kind of a big arm stroke, and that's why he's kind of off time and inconsistent with his delivery and strikes. But he's pretty young. I want to say he's 22, 23. And I think his arsenal is wide enough that he could go like multiple innings just because, like, he's really like hell on righties. Like, I want to say it's like 500 or maybe a sub 500 OPS split against righties this year. So like, I feel like if you have it lined up right, that's someone who's, if he's throwing strikes, you can bring him back out and, you know, can have some quick innings in terms of just breaking bats with like high 90s sinkers. I think he's fun. I think it adds something a little bit high ceiling looking to the bullpen that doesn't currently have it. At the same time, if they didn't want to pick a reliever who had 11 walks per 9 in a AAA cameo at the end of the year, I get it. That's why they pay you guys the big bucks to make those sort of decisions. In kind of figuring out, like, the White Sox have a lot of bats they need to add to like put out a credible lineup this year. The Yohendrick Paniagua with the Blue Jays is pretty interesting. He has like really nutty data where he doesn't swing and miss a lot and really high exit velocities. He torched double A and got a triple A this year. He struggled. He was like averageist in triple A. He's kind of a short guy. You know, at Fangraphs, we didn't really like him as good as his data looked. We're not sure how much he's going to like pull fastballs to the upper level, but he's a left-handed corner bat. He can only really play left field, which I don't know if you want two iffy left-handed left fielders on the same roster. It's like, on one hand, like, obviously Benintendi's not going to play there full time and there's reps room to left field, but do you want like the same guy to be there? I think it's like a low probability of really sticking in him being like a regular, but in terms of like the White Sox are a point where like any shot they take, I'm like, oh, interesting. Let's see. Because I know like the big shot's not coming. So I'm like, I'm willing to listen out any weird idea they have. And like, hey, could we make our offseason sing if we find like someone who's a strong half of, a platoon or can face righties on the Rule 5 draft? You don't really see a lot of corner bats, I feel like, sticking in the Rule 5 draft. Like, I think that's usually, if those guys are pretty close, you're locking them up or protecting them, but that'd be interesting. But there's a lot of options. There's certainly people who fit into the mess stuff, but are stretched out and throw strikes bucket that they've targeted before. I just find those people boring to watch on video. Whereas Olimber Santa throwing, one, his last name is Santa, that tons of marketing.
Tons
potential
of marketing.
There. But just, every pitch is going to be really hard and is going to have a ton of running action. Where it goes, that's what you come to the ballpark to find out. It's my mentality about it.
All right. So James wants excitement. Jim, anyone catch your attention for the White Sox in the Rule 5 draft?
It does feel like this could be a year where they do take a shot at upside because they got, two players from it last year. And so, it's kind of found money and, how many more, approach angle guys do they need? Like how many, real big extension on a undersized frame or, fastball gets up on you because it's coming from an arm angle you don't really expect. Like it feels like they have enough of those guys and, the results have been kind of uninspiring to where like they can find those guys freely available with options elsewhere versus having somebody that they need to carry. And also like the benefit of having somebody whose stuff explodes for better or for worse is that like if you have guys in cover innings, then you can work them in one inning at a time and in low leverage situations and see how it goes. Tough thing is that they're harder to keep, just because teams will gladly have them back for whatever cost to buy them, have them in the organization. So, I would like to see them, take a shot. I think of like the guys who feel like could stick over the course of the year, like, going through Baseball America's list and is at the top, like Jared Southard was somebody who just like, well, he's got a sinker. They like sinkers. He's got high spin breaking stuff. They like that. It feels less gimmicky in terms of like how he goes about it and how he fits the White Sox arsenal. Like, I heard Griff McGarry's name last year at the Rule 5 draft and he's there and, crazy was a change up I think his best pitch and like get strikeouts but also walks a ton, didn't really get to Triple A last year, so that feels like kind of pointless to do where the White Sox are, but yeah, it's I would imagine they get somebody who feels like is most of the way there in terms of throwing strikes and maybe just a matter of like use this pitch instead of this pitch for an idea versus throw more strikes in general.
The name that I've circled is Blake Burkhalter from the Atlanta Braves, only because he was effective double-A starter. They promoted him to triple-A, reliever, throws 94, can hit 98, and it's got a kick change. Kind of sounds like Shane Smith. I don't know if he's as good, but if you want to go that route again, that's maybe you're Shane Smith in this upcoming Rule 5 draft. We'll see. That's just the name I'm circled. The White Sox love their Blakes. Lots of Blakes over the years. We'll see. We'll see who the White Sox do take. And not that we'll overreact. Hopefully it's not the only move that the White Sox make during the winter meetings. And that James is wrong, that they do something else that catches our attention. Because we'll all be there in Orlando covering it for you guys on SoxMachine.com at the winter meetings. And then finally, for this episode, around Major League Baseball, when it comes to the winter meetings, I hinted at it earlier. The Blue Jays have been very active. They've been flirting with Kyle Tucker. We've seen craziness at winter meetings in the past. James, I recall the 2019 winter meetings in San Diego where it was just like one huge free agent signing per day. Could we see Kyle Tucker sign during the winter meetings?
I know nothing. I cover the White Sox. I have no idea what Kyle Tucker's market timeline is going to be. I haven't checked on it once. I haven't said his name out loud in probably 3 months. I don't know. Maybe.
Whatever. Okay. So then I'll just skip James when it comes to the bold prediction, what happens in Orlando. So, Jim, if you had to make a bold prediction, what would be the biggest move that happens during the winter meetings?
Seems like Kyle Schwarber is kind of approaching critical interest to where like teams are emerging as favorites and somebody has to eventually step up and end it. So I would say that, you know, looking at the top list, I think Tucker might be further away from finding a taker and really shaping his market. But Schwarber seems like he's got finalists or teams that could, I guess, make that offer at any moment.
It'd be wild if he does go to like Cincinnati. I kind of want to see Schwarber hit at Great American Ballpark and have that be his home ballpark.
That'd be cool.
I mean, that's easy 50 homers, like, right? And Cincinnati, well,
a lot of river balls, right? Yeah.
Has Cincinnati really ever signed anyone to that large of a deal?
Can you go somewhere where it's hard to hit home runs?
Why?
What's the fun of clearing the fence by 150 feet? It's a waste of time.
I think it'd be great.
Go to Japan.
Fix their dead ball era by yourself. I'm with Jim. I think Schwarber signs. I don't see a Tarek Skubal trade happening during the winter meetings. I don't see it happening at all unless the Detroit Tigers fall completely flat on their face in the first half of the season. So I'm with Jim. So Jim and I think Kyle Schwarber will sign. James doesn't care. We did get.
Tucker's already at the visiting facilities stage.
You just
of the thing,
said but... you haven't been paying attention. You haven't even uttered his name in 3 months.
Based on my experience of stalking out Manny Machado's visit to the White Sox all those years ago, sitting in the cold with earning a begrudging respect from Bruce Levine because we were both out there doing something that felt very silly. Because he's at that stage, you know, history tells us that he's within 2-3 months of signing at the most. I don't think it goes longer than that. That's usually a sign that by the end of the next quarter, he will be with a new team. So could be within the next 6 days. Who knows?
I can't even with you right now, James. Sahadev Sharma over at The Athletic did report that the Chicago Cubs out on Kyle Tucker, but it seems like they're going to approach Alex Bregman. So maybe that's another big name that does sign during the winter meetings if the Cubs do make that big of a splash. But we did get a couple of fan questions from social media, one from Instagram, which you can follow us on Instagram at Sox Machine. And the Instagram handle is I am not Josh. Okay. Clever. And the question is, if the White
Josh,
Sox,
you can just ask
it's,
us
not me. It's not me.
Create very sloppily.
Not me.
Impose fake accounts.
The perfect crime.
The question is, if the White Sox get the number one overall pick, does that impact the White Sox free agency targets this offseason, James?
I wouldn't think so. I think those budgets are separate.
I hope so.
And since, like, was it? Chalosky's a shortstop, right?
Yeah, Rock Chalosky.
Their strategy already is just to acquire a zillion shortstops. So I don't think it would affect free agency because it's another shortstop coming no matter what.
And then our last question from Paul Riker, a bit dour, Jim. How many days before the first Anthony K trade rumor?
I would say it's got to take until July.
What a fun team we cover. It's going to be a great time in the winter meetings. We'll try to make it entertaining for you guys. And again, any news that does happen with the Chicago White Sox or around Major League Baseball will be reported on SoxMachine.com. We'll have a couple of podcasts as well. Other interviews that we'll be doing and talking to other folks in the national media about what's going on in the winter meetings and with the Chicago White Sox. So expect that flurry of content coming your way early next week as all three of us will be in Orlando for the winter meetings. And that couldn't happen without your guys' support. So thank you so much for those that have subscribed to Sox Machine at SoxMachine.com. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. If you just discovered the Sox Machine Podcast, you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts, such as Spotify and Apple Music. You can also listen to the show and watch our videos at youtube.com/SoxMachine. Follow us on social media. It's going to be very busy for us. We're at Sox Machine on all the platforms. You can follow James at JR Fegan. You can follow me at SoxMachine_Josh. And when it comes to Sox Machine subscriptions, a very fun thing, it seems like we are tagging along with Defector, Jim. So how is that working?
Yes, Defector, the former Deadspin staff that departed after ownership changes and launched their own sites. For those who might not be familiar with it, they are on the same platform that we are on at Sox Machine Lead. And so they've partnered with us and other lead publications, outlets for a holiday deal where if you subscribe to Defector, then if you buy a gift subscription with Defector, you'll get a free gift subscription to the choice of five lead platforms. And we are one of them. And figure this is a, you know, they have a fascination with the White Sox. You know, their tag is Blight Sox because of just, you know, that's been the news for many, many years of just how disappointing they are and the kind of rubbernecking that they inspire. And Defector is good at that. So there is a kinship in terms of like, we both look at the same thing. You just have to look at it far less and just pick the good parts. So yeah, we are happy to team up with them just for December. You know, it basically amounts to getting two subscriptions for the price of one if you'd like to gift yourself or if you'd like to gift a Sox Machine subscription to somebody else in your life. If you already subscribed, thank you. Then you can get a Defector subscription, send the gift subscription for Sox Machine to somebody else, and you're basically giving them a free gift. And people think that you paid for it. So lots of benefits for this arrangement over the course of December. It's kind of like a trial program to bundle it since, yeah. You know, it is, you know, people have to pick and choose what they subscribe to. So this is a way to make selection a little bit easier.
That's awesome. So just defector.com, yes, to sign up. Awesome. Well, take advantage of that. And if you already have a Sox Machine subscription, gift one to your parents or to your friends that are like, yeah, I love reading or listening to the Sox Machine podcast, but I don't have a subscription. You can help them out. So help out Defector. Help out Sox Machine. Go to defector.com and sign up. And either gift yourself or gift a Sox Machine subscription to a loved one. But that will do it for this episode of the Sox Machine Podcast. Thank you guys so much for listening. The Sox Machine Podcast is part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. And alongside Jim Margulis and James Fegan, I'm Josh Nelson. We'll talk to you guys next in Orlando.